Thanks be to God. Thank you, Margaret. Money, money, money must be funny in a rich man's world. All the things I could do if I had a little... You know the song, don't you? Some of you wanted to sing along. Some of you were thinking, oh, this is so embarrassing. Look at him. Dear, oh dear. Today we're thinking about money. What would you do if you won the lottery? What would you do? All the things I could do. Wouldn't it be fantastic? Just think that the new house, the new car, all the fun, all the friends suddenly. Oh, well, okay. Do you ever wish you just had a little bit more money? A survey was done, a huge survey actually, a few years back, found that on average people thought they'd be really happy if they just had 25% more. The rich, not loads more, just 25% more. The poor don't want a huge amount of money, just 25% more. Everyone thought 25% more. In today's passage, the teacher who wrote Ecclesiastes turns to address wealth and money. He says, their meaning is that. Is there eternal value in this? Is this the point? Is this what we should be living for? I mean, everybody's chasing after it. Everyone's seeking it. Ecclesiastes is a wisdom book. It's written so that we might be wise in how we live. And how desperately our world needs wisdom with money, doesn't it? You need to look around. But I wonder, what would you expect God to say about money? Perhaps you might think, some people think that God is anti-money. Have you heard this saying? Money is the root of all evil. Have you heard that? Do you know that comes from the Bible? But it's a complete misquotation. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10 says this: the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. That's a pretty bad misquotation, isn't it? It changes the meaning quite a lot. The love of money, not just money, is a root of all kinds of evil. So we need to be wise. And it's the love of money, not just money, which is in the teacher's sights. And we're going to follow through this passage under three headings. Firstly, it's bad to be wealthy. That should come up behind me. Then be wise, and then it's good to be wealthy. But we're starting here. It's bad to be wealthy. Remember, the teacher is trying to undermine the love of money. And if you've got your passages open, please turn back and have a look down at verse 10. And the first thing that he says, verse 10, is that you'll never have enough. Verse 10, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. I said earlier about that survey, people just want 25% more. Well, if you did win the lottery and you did buy that new bigger house, just think of what would happen. You'd have so many more rooms. They would all need cleaning, so suddenly you'd need to be getting a cleaner. You'd find that your car just looks out of place, sat on the drive with all the neighbours, so you'd need to get a new, faster car, perhaps two. The people that you start meeting in the neighbourhood tell you about their holidays, and suddenly the kind of holiday you've been taking just doesn't cut it, and so you have to start taking a new kind of holiday. Everything starts costing more and more money. You've never got enough. It's like rice on the chessboard. Do you know about that? On the first square, you put one grain of rice. On the second, you put two. On the next, four, and then eight. And it doubles, and it doubles, and it doubles. Do you know what happens? There aren't enough rice grains in the universe to put on the final square. And there are barely enough atoms in the universe, in fact. You'll never have enough. Start small, and it grows and grows and grows. And when it comes to money, this idea that you'll never have enough is not a new idea. The Romans, in Jesus' time, they used to have a phrase. They would say, money is like seawater. The more of it you drink, the thirstier you become. Be warned. Watch your heart. It's bad to be wealthy. You'll never have enough. But there's more. Look down at verse 11. His next warning, don't hoard. Verse 11 says this: as goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? You can imagine, can't you? I mean, I'd never forget going to someone's house, not far from here, And it seemed that he just couldn't throw things away. There was a small winding path through all the stuff that was piled high. And we made our way, as he let me in, through this winding path and into the living room. He cleared some space on a chair by moving lots of stuff. And as I sat down, I looked at him, I could see behind him a pile of computers, one on top of another. And the top one, I mean, all of them worked. The top one was the one that was being used. It was extraordinary. Stuff everywhere. It was as if he'd lived his life by that famous motto. Oh, that might come in useful. I can't throw that away. Do you know that motto? Yeah, oh dear. What were those four old computers doing? Well, in the words of verse 11, what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? And more, I can think of someone close to me who, when his parents died, inherited boxes and boxes of stuff. He took it all in. So much of it was full of memorabilia and letters, that kind of thing. He just couldn't throw it away without checking through everything. And he has spent years sorting through all the stuff. I looked and I said to him, you've wasted so much time. This has taken over. Don't hoard. Pass on your old mobile phone to someone who can use it. Take those clothes to the charity shop. Having more stuff doesn't make you happy. Ironically, having less clutter around at home really does. But there's more. There's more. It's bad to be wealthy because in verse 12 he says, it will steal your peace. It will steal your peace. Verse 12, the sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether they eat little or much. But as for the rich, their abundance permits them no sleep. Now, I see people nodding. It's very simple, isn't it? If you don't have anything, then no one can steal it from you. And if you have loads and loads, loads of precious things, well, you've got loads to lose. And it's hard to watch over all of them all the time so carefully. You can imagine it, can't you? The rich person lying in bed at night, worrying about all their stuff. Tom Ford has a very British sounding name. He's actually the guy who turned Gucci into a multi-billion dollar business. Yeah, it's not so Italian as you thought. Asked when he was interviewed what he most valued, Tom Ford said this: what I most value is sleep. I exercise every day. I do yoga. I've got a personal trainer. I've got just the right mattress and just the right air conditioning. But still, I can't sleep. I go through 2 or 3 days with just an hour's sleep a night. And the journalist who interviewed him said this: in this overworked, money-obsessed culture, Tom Ford must be one of thousands dreaming of the unpurchasable luxury of a good night's sleep. It's interesting, isn't it? Our culture says the opposite, but it is bad to be wealthy. It steals your peace. And sleep is just one example of this. So you buy that new property or two. You start to rent it out. Your income comes in more and more, but you've got to look after the tenants. You've got to maintain everything properly. Make sure you've got the right insurance. And now you've got 2 houses, 3, 4, 5, where you've got to deal with the problems when the boiler breaks or when something goes wrong. And the worries mount up and up, and the work mounts up. It will steal your peace. But there's more. He doesn't stop there. Verse 13, have a look down. He says it's bad to be wealthy because it can hurt you. It can hurt you. Verse 13, he says, I have seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owners. To the harm of its owners. And I think this is where we can be genuinely surprised. I think we don't think that money would hurt us. We think it might change a few things, but it wouldn't hurt us. It's not dangerous. If someone brought drugs or weapons into our lives, well, we know that they can hurt us. We don't think that about money. But listen to Sandra Hayes, who in 2006 won over £20 million in the lottery. And she said, I had to endure the greed and the need that people have trying to get you to release their money to them. That caused a lot of emotional pain. These are people who you love deep down, and they're turning into vampires trying to suck the life out of me. Or Donna Mickin, who won over £30 million on the lottery, and she said, my life was hijacked by the lottery. I had loads of money, but I was emotionally bankrupt. Most of us think that winning the lottery is the ultimate fulfillment, but I found that wasn't the case. Before, I would have considered myself a happy person. But after we won, my inner dialogue was manic. I became more concerned about how I was being judged and perceived, not realizing that I was the one doing the judging in the first place. If you ask me, my life was hijacked by the lottery. And the strangest thing is, I'm sure there are people, some of you, listening to that and thinking, yeah, I'd be different though. I'd be careful. It wouldn't hurt me. Hear the warning. It is bad to be wealthy. It can hurt you. Now he goes on. He says more and more. We don't have time to look at everything. But at verse 14 and 15, he says, you can lose it. You can fail to pass it on to your kids. And ultimately, you can't take it with you. Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, he says. And as everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands. It's in the funeral service. We say we brought nothing into the world and we take nothing out. It's no real value, he says. That's the warning. You'll never have enough. Don't hoard. It will steal your peace. It can hurt you. And you can't take it with you. And yet, I think, I'm not sure we really believe that. Before I became a Christian, my ambition was, without a doubt, my life's ambition to earn a six-figure salary, to have a beautiful big house in London. It was all about wealth. And my maths is good enough that I could have got a job in investment banking. That was the plan, until God saved me out of that way of thinking. I still see that old attitude, though, towards money in my life. I see it within myself. You should see how many of those old Jiffy bags that I save up. They're so expensive. I can't throw it away, so I save and keep them. You should see how much we stock up on cereal or crisps when they're on special offer. And my wife bans me from buying any more. Or when the yellow sticker offers on in the supermarket. I struggle to spend money. Everything's about saving money. Gotta save. Is there a cheaper way of doing this? We need to believe the warning. We need to hear the teacher. It's bad to be wealthy. Why do you work two jobs or do those extra hours and end up seeing so much less of your family? Why do you consistently pursue those home improvements one after another after another? Why don't you get that cheaper car so you can give an extra £1,000 to church this year? So often there's something in our hearts that stops us. But the teacher, though he warns us, he doesn't stop there. He doesn't just warn us. He wants to direct our hearts. He believes and trusts in God, and he has some wisdom to share with us. So that's our second point. And it's this: be wise. Look down at verse 18 and what he says. Verse 18. This is what I have observed to be good. That it is appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, to find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given them, for this is their lot. And verse 19, moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is the gift of God. So the gift of God this time isn't to have loads of wealth and possessions. No, he says it in two bits. It's one, to enjoy the wealth and possessions God has given you. And two, to accept your lot in life. If I put those into my own words, I'd say this: look at what you've got and be pleased. And don't look at what others have and get jealous. Look at what you've got and be pleased. And don't look at what others have and be jealous. You see, he looks around, he sees people who have loads and loads and can't enjoy it. And yet those with so little who really enjoy it, with thankful hearts to God, who are happy, well, they are the ones who are wise, he says. Be wise. And I want to challenge us to embrace this way of thinking. Do you wish you thought that way? Do you wish that your heart had that kind of wisdom in it? Well, I hope so. So I want to suggest to you that that you pray this particular prayer. It should come up on the screen. It comes from Proverbs chapter 30. And it says this: "Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise I may have too much and disown you, and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or I may become poor and steal, and so dishonor the name of my God." Our society is essentially materialistic. Many people believe that all there is are material things, and so they live by the motto, "He who dies with the most toys wins." So people want stuff, and with it, status. But as Christians, we know there is more, and we understand why stuff never satisfies. Can you pray this prayer? Can you say that deep down in your heart? Can you ask God not to give you too much? Can you ask him not to give you something if it would take you further from him? Ask him to give you enough for each day, your daily bread, and no more. "Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise I may have too much or too little." Well, if you want to pray that to God now in your heart, he can see. He knows what you're thinking. If you say, "Yes, Lord, that's what I really want. I know it's hard, but it's best. Give me that." That's being wise. That brings joy. But it's not the last thing that we need to say, because we need to look at a couple of passages from the New Testament. We need to see, finally, that it is good to be wealthy. It's good to be wealthy. I'm going to show you two verses from the New Testament. The first one shows us what true wealth really is. It should come up behind me now. It's Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5. It says this: "Keep your life free from love of money, and be content with what you have. For he has said, 'I will never leave you nor forsake you.'" Do you see what he's saying? Keep your life free from the love of money. Well, we talked about that. It's the love of money. "Be content with what you have." That's the wisdom. "For he has said, 'I will never leave you nor forsake you.'" He explains why we can have this contentment. Because God has said, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." We can be content because we have the most precious thing in the world. We have God. Is he a treasure for you? Is he your treasure? Do you remember that story Jesus told about the treasure hidden in the field? The man sold everything he had to get hold of it because it was so precious. That's God. See, the Bible never calls us to give up something without taking up something in its place. And I said, didn't I, that before I was a Christian, I wanted to be really rich. Well, now that I'm a Christian, I don't. Why? Because money is much less important to me, and God is much more important to me. I want to be close to him. I want to know his ways. I want to live for him. Money doesn't satisfy, and it hurts you. But knowing God does satisfy. That's what real wealth is. Knowing God through Jesus Christ. But you're possibly thinking, okay, that sounds lovely, but are those two things really relevant to each other? Does my spiritual life really interact with my wallet, with my money, with my love of or desire for money? Well, listen to our second verse from the New Testament. Look at the language that it uses. It comes from 2 Corinthians chapter 8. And it says this: "You know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you, through his poverty, may become rich." Do you see the language? Language of rich and poor. Jesus is described as rich. He was in heaven. He had everything, every comfort. He had contentment. If you trust in him, then you can know that he made this journey for you, a great journey. He left the wealth and riches of heaven, all its comfort. He became poor, born a human baby in a stable. He gave himself ultimately to a criminal's death on a cross. He did that so we could receive the generous gift, a free gift. We start poor, but if we receive his gift, we can be wealthy beyond compare. Our future life will be with him in heaven, where he is now returned, in all the comfort that he once left. Even our life now is filled with every spiritual blessing in Christ. We are family with each other and with God. He loves us. Through Jesus' death, he sees us as perfect. He sends his Spirit to be with us every day. That is true wealth. And so this verse that's behind me, when it uses language of rich and poor, and when we think of ourselves and how good it is to be wealthy, well, this verse isn't just using financial language to speak of the wonder of God's free gift. It's not just a metaphor. It's not just a parallel between money and spiritual things. No, it's doing more than that. This verse is asking us to rethink what poverty and wealth really are. To rethink what it means to be rich. Not to think of it simply in financial terms, but to think spiritually. You can have money in the bank, loads of it, and yet be in poverty. You can have no money and be wealthy. You can have no assets to your name, no retirement fund, and yet be stinking rich. The wealth that we should want, the wealth which doesn't hurt us, the wealth that's good, is the wealth that Jesus himself gave up and gives to those who follow him. If you understand the gospel message right, the message we remember each week as we gather here together, as we celebrate God's love and kindness to us, rightly understood, you'll see, spiritually speaking, a Christian is like someone who has won the lottery. Except the wealth we receive, it doesn't hurt us, doesn't harm us. It does good for our hearts. It's not dangerous. It's not limited to just one or two. But anyone who comes to Jesus can have spiritual wealth. So my longing for you, having seen this passage, is that you won't simply pursue money and material things in this world, but you'd give all your time, all the things that you need to do to gain more and more spiritual wealth. You'd pursue God, serve him, know him, draw your daily cash, as it were, from him, because he is the wealth we long for. And of course, as you do that, your money, well, you'll treat it as what it really is. Just another thing amongst all the things that God gives you, which you're supposed to use for his kingdom and according to his ways. So if you haven't thought about it recently, look over your giving to the work of this church, which is your local family of God. Look over the ways you spend your money. Not because money is really, really important, but because your heart is. And it's a great way of knowing what's in your heart, what you do with your money. How do you treat it? How do you spend it? How do you use it? Can you say, Lord, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread, otherwise I may have too much or too little. Amen.